All right, ladies and gentlemen, I've got an announcement to make. It seems that Richie has possibly taken an extended bathroom break. So I have no idea where he's at, so it is just going to be me reviewing what I believe is the weakest film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Thor: Dark World. And so this is the second film in the Thor trilogy, or at least so far, the Thor trilogy. And this was almost close to the end of the Phase 1 Marvel films that it had, or the beginning of Phase 2. Yes, Phase 1 ended with the Avengers. And this is a Phase 2 film, the second Phase 2 film besides Iron Man 3. And it follows Thor on his quest to save, pretty much the Nine Realms from Malekith, who is a dark elf. And, I mean, to first start off, after seeing this film again, it's the same to me. It gets a 6 out of 10 to me, an above-average film, slightly. Nothing more, nothing less. Like, the 66% Rotten Tomatoes rating, I think, is actually spot on. The villain is basically a standard-issue bad guy when it comes to films. I mean, we have no idea, what his real struggle is as a dark elf. Like, we know that, say, he fought Bor because Malekith was trying to plunge, say, the Nine Realms into eternal darkness. But why? Like, did his family get murdered by Bor? Did something happen to his race of dark elves where he wants them to, say, be dark? Or he wants the world, or where he wants the, say, Nine Realms to be dark like his realm is in Svartsfalheim, but we really don't get anything like that with him. It's just that he's evil for the sake of being evil. And there's no character development for this guy. There's no, reason for me to maybe feel sympathetic to his plight, for example. He's just a bad guy. I got nothing on him. I have to keep looking at my notes to remember what the guy's name is. Just the actor that portrays him, who is a pretty good actor. He does have a name that definitely, his last name, Christopher, it looks like Eccleston. He's a good actor in other films, but he just, to me, wasn't given a lot of material to work with in fleshing out this villain. Because he walks around doing the big bad guy stuff. Hardly has any dialogue, actually. And most of his dialogue is actually in, a language that they had actually created, which was actually quite good for the film, but they created a language for the Dark Elves for this, and that's most of how you hear him speak.
Pasayamana Lanola.
He speaks English to Thor and speaks English to Jane Foster, but overall, this movie, while I was watching it, I had an urge to browse Reddit, for example. And whenever I have an urge to do something else, I know the film is average at best. And that's what I think it is, especially after viewing it again just recently before talking about it. I would even say it's the weakest of all Thor films, because everybody knows that Thor Ragnarok is just, There's no comparison for these films, but I still think the first Thor is a better movie in terms of character development, in terms of the overarching story, in terms of how it sets up the MCU. The only thing that this movie sets up in terms of the MCU is the Aether being one of the Infinity Stones. Other than that, you really don't get anything else. It's in there because you're never going to see the villain again. The Dark Elves, they're bye-bye. I mean, it sets up, Thor Ragnarok later because we figure out that Loki was impersonating Odin all along at the end of the scene, at the end of the movie. But I didn't feel, that this is the best Thor film. I think it's the weakest, and in the MCU, I think it's probably one of the weakest MCU films. I mean, I thought The Incredible Hulk was weak. I still think it's weaker than Thor the Dark World, but Thor's not much better, this one. Especially in terms of the other Phase 2 films. Like, you've got Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, Age of Ultron, that all came out after this, and they are so far and away better films. And this is, if I had to pick and choose out of, like, those five films to then watch, I would never even pick Thor the Dark World to watch. It's just an average film. And to me, one of the things that's average about it is that there's really no build-up. There's not a lot of arc for Thor. Like, we already know that Thor, from the first movie, has changed to this protector. And he goes from protector of Earth at the start of the film to protector of Earth, who just happens to visit Jane Foster a little more at the end of the film. Like, he didn't want the kingship in the first Thor at the end, because he figured out this is what he needed to do, and he doesn't want the kingship at the end. Like, he basically becomes just the same Thor throughout the whole movie. He doesn't have this internal conflict that he's dealing with the entire time, or, you know, becoming a different man, becoming a better Asgardian. He's already done that. The only thing he's trying to do is, you know, save his people from Malekith. And that's why I think it's kind of weak. There's not a lot of development that goes on. I mean, really, the only thing that really scares him is Jane Foster getting possessed by the Aether. Which, like, we'll talk about that, like, moving into, like, the overall plot, because I don't think there's much of an arc when it comes to here. Like, Malekith doesn't have an arc. He's a big bad who tries to do big bad things. Odin doesn't really have an arc. Loki is probably the best part of the film, but his arc is more of a trickster, where you think he's kind of redeemed himself after his mother dies. But there's really not a lot of arcs that anybody's got. It's really just kind of moving along through a story that needs to set up the future Infinity War, is what it seems. But the overall storyline is that the Dark Elves were at war with Bor, who was the father of Odin, and they got some of this right in terms of Norse mythology. So, like, Svartalfheim, like, that is one of the Nine Realms. I like that quite a lot. But when you've got something like the Aether, like Malekith, for example, in the comics, did not have the Aether. They actually had the Casket of Ancient Winters, which was referenced in the first film. But that was something that Malekith was in possession of in the comics. And he is a dark elf in the comics, but his powers are a lot different. We really don't see him be very powerful. Yeah, he's strong. He's got stamina, speed, durability, right? But he is actually vulnerable to iron in the comics. And we didn't really get to see anything like that. Like maybe to get the ether out of him, you had to use an iron substance or something, because he's able to use magical abilities in the comics. Things like energy projection, teleportation. He can be physically malleable. He can transform into mist. You know, cast illusions. So he was almost more of a trickster god than Loki is when it comes to it. But they didn't give him any of that. He's essentially this guy who walks in a couple of scenes and barely fights until he actually takes possession of the ether. If he's supposed to be such this imposing figure, he really doesn't show it at all. But this does directly follow the events of the Avengers, though, because what you're seeing is Loki, say, being taken for his crimes on Earth, and Thor is, like, repelling marauders in Vanaheim, which Vanaheim is home to the Vanir gods in Norse myth, and essentially the Vanir are about the same power level as the Aesir, and the Aesir are the, like, Asgardian gods that you see Thor, Odin, Loki. But when you look at Vanaheim, it seems like they're being, like, almost taken out by a bunch of bandits. And in real Norse myth, no, the Vanir are extremely powerful gods and extremely powerful people. But Thor has to come here to, like, you know, fight a battle, because apparently his other friends aren't doing so well, and he's able to get there because the Bifrost has been reconstructed that was destroyed, say, 2 years earlier. And this actually causes them to learn about the Convergence, which the Convergence is kind of the main plot device of this film. It's where all nine realms kind of come together.
Do you recall what I taught you of the Convergence?
Yes. The alignment of the worlds. It approaches, doesn't it?
The universe hasn't seen this marvel since before my watch began. Few can sense it, even fewer can see it. The wireless effects can be dangerous. It is truly beautiful.
I see nothing.
Or perhaps that is not the beauty you seek.
How is she?
She's quite clever, your mortal. She doesn't know it yet, but she studies the Convergence as well. Even...
what?
I can't see her.
And, like, reality's warped, gravity's weird, you know, almost a whole bunch of stuff is just out of whack. And Jane Foster, who is Thor's love interest, right, in the film so far, she also is experiencing this event. And her buddies are looking at it. So everybody's looking at this Convergence. And, you know, Jane Foster ends up falling into, I mean, not necessarily a portal, but she ends up going to where the ether was and gets absorbed by it. And this is what causes Thor to come back to her after being gone for so long, because Heimdall can no longer see her. And this is what causes Malekith to enter into this world. Or not this world, but to enter into the fray, because he can sense the ether. And so he'll go and attack Asgard, and Frigga is killed during this time in Asgard because she's trying to protect Jane Foster. So this now gives kind of Thor something to fight for, gives him a little bit more revenge-seeking, but you don't really see that a lot. I mean, you saw him, say, blast Malekith, say, before he leaves, but Thor, in his quest to, say, avenge his mother and also stop Malekith from destroying Asgard, directly defies Odin and commits treason along with a couple of others, and they go, say, after Malekith. And they use, say, him as, they use Jane Foster as bait to get the ether out of her so he can destroy it. But what he doesn't understand about an Infinity Stone is it's not that easy, say, to take out. Now, what is funny is that this stone is later the Reality Stone, but the ether really doesn't show people kind of how to shape or warp reality. Like, Malekith really doesn't use it that way. Like, maybe plunging the world into the eternal darkness is the only way he can use the Reality Stone. Unlike Thanos, you know, reality can be whatever he wants, for example. But that's basically the main point of this film, is to make sure that, say, Malekith doesn't get his hands on the ether. And they end up winning. Like, they essentially send him back to Svartalfheim, and his ship crashes on him, killing Malekith. Very anticlimactic. There's not this big, huge battle that ensues that causes massive amounts of destruction and mayhem, you know, of someone who is in possession of an Infinity Stone could do. Like, there's just not that much. And as I said before, like, Thor declines Odin's offer to be king, but it's been Loki this whole time, who you thought was dead during a clash with Malekith on Svartalfheim, which Loki pretended to cut Thor's hand off, but didn't. It was just an illusion. But Loki ended up not dying and impersonated Odin to take his place. And so, like, that's basically, like, the overall, like, plot of this movie. And, I mean, it's just very simplistic. There's not a lot of nuance to it. There's not a lot of, say, underarching themes. It's just a very bog-standard superhero film. Nothing much else about it, to me. Now, the Stan Lee cameo that was in here, because we always got to talk about the Stan Lee cameo, is when Dr. Erik Selvig is talking about the Convergence and how everything's going to happen with shoes. And Stan Lee is in kind of the, I guess, if it's probably a mental institution that's in there, and he just asks, can I have my shoe back? So he is not a question of mistaken identity or anything like that. He is just a character in the world for there. And there's actually a couple, like, after the credits scenes that are in this movie. And the first after the credits scene is giving, say, the ether to the collector, which we see is where Thanos finally gets that stone in Infinity War. But you can see him say, one down, five to go. And so you know that over the course of the MCU, the collector also wants, say, all of these stones. Like, obviously, because he wants to collect them. But then the second credit scene really doesn't add anything to the MCU. It's Thor coming back to kiss Jane Foster. That's about it. Like, nothing talking about anything Avengers-related or anything. But the trivia is actually not too bad. Because there's a couple of things. Like, there was a fun cameo, say, that Chris Evans did as Captain America, because you see Loki turning into him. Tom Hiddleston actually wore a suit and did an impression of Chris Evans. And so Evans came to do his cameo. He actually used that as a point of reference. Actually, the post-credit scene where Thor and Jane Foster actually kiss, that's not Natalie Portman. That's actually Chris Hemsworth's wife, because Natalie Portman was not available to film the post-credit scene. And then Loki's trial was actually in a movie prequel comic book, or in a prequel comic book that was supposed to serve as a bridge in there, but the filmmakers liked it so much that they actually incorporated his trial in the film. But it wasn't actually supposed to be there. And then the stone creature that Thor fights in that battle, where he comes in to help his other buddies out, is a Cronin. And it's an alien being that appeared in Thor's first comic and is, I believe, the same race that our favorite character from Thor Ragnarok, Korg, is, because he's made of rooks. This is my friend Meek. And then Jane Foster was actually thought of to be a villain in the first one of the first drafts of this script for the plot line, where the ether was not only going to consume her like it did, but also make her a pretty evil person. But they wanted to keep Malekith in that as part of the film. They didn't want to introduce a villain so late and have Thor fight, his love interest like that. They just didn't think it would be right for the film. Maybe that would have been better, considering Thor would have had a little bit more to think about. And even Idris Elba, who plays Heimdall, said he disliked working on the film, and he even referred to it as torture. Now, watching this movie doesn't necessarily mean, it wasn't torture for me, but would I watch it again? I'd probably browse Reddit instead while it was playing in the background. That's the kind of movie it is for me. Like, it's a background movie to where I can do other things while it's playing. I hate saying that, but it's just, this is not my favorite. But the next movie in the Marvel timeline that came out is my favorite. Spoiler alert. Captain America: The Winter Soldier. That should be next on the docket if we're going in order, based on our countdown to Endgame. But that's the one I really can't wait for. And we'll have a lot more to talk about when it comes to that. But I think that's what I thought of Thor: The Dark World. It was a slightly above average film, is all. And with that, I will say, where's Richie? Because he's still in the bathroom. So good luck, Richie, on your bathroom break. And good night to you all.